RadioInfluence.com.
Performance with the Crusher, Jeff Crochelle. Get in on the talent grid and text Crush at 101260 with your questions, comments, or smart-ass remarks.
And welcome to Crush Performance, everybody. I am Jeff Crochelle, the con man is here, and we're your weekly source for performance information. No matter what you're trying to do, if you're trying to get better, we're here to help. We always say that getting good at something is easy. Actually, it's very easy if you know what to do. And that's where things usually break down, knowing what to do, or at least knowing how to plan out your attack on whatever it is you're trying to accomplish. That's the key. And that's sort of the premise behind my first book. It's called The Performance Plan. It just came out. Kindle, the paperback is out. The audiobook is coming. It's called The Performance Plan on Amazon right now. And I wrote that for my athletes and for my clients, because what I've found over the years working with athletes and clients at every level of human performance is not so much the physical ability, not so much the resources, not so much the limitations that are surrounding and holding people back. It's just, what are we supposed to do? And maybe even more importantly, where do you start? That's what the book's all about. It's a starting point. You need to set up a plan, but you also need to know how to set up that plan so you can accomplish your goal. In the book, I want to thank everybody for the feedback we've gotten so far. It's been a lot of fun, and frankly, the second one's already in the works, so I've really enjoyed it, and hopefully we'll continue to help people out that way. And speaking of helping people out and spreading the good word, it was a very busy week here at Crush Performance. Earlier this week, I was up in Fort McMurray with the good people at E-Construction, a road construction company that is just top shelf. Now, when these guys called, I'm going, okay, hey, listen, what am I going to talk to a road construction company about? Well, they wanted to talk to their employees about, you know, performance cultures, but more so health and wellness, injury prevention, and just performing at the highest level. And I've done these presentations before for oil companies, for bankers, for weed controllers. And the cool thing is, when we first get into it, you know, what is a sports guy going to talk about to these industry companies? The parallels between business and sport are uncanny. And that's why I love doing these talks so much, because we can tie these two great worlds together. The good people working on the job sites for e-construction are no different than our NFL football teams or our CFL football teams or our NHL guys or our baseball guys. They're the performers. Our job is to create a performance environment where they can do their jobs to the best of their ability. And on the individual side, we've got to give them the information that they need to stay healthy and do their jobs well every single day. One, yes, to perform well, no question about it, but most importantly, to stay safe and reduce risk of injuries. Very, very cool stuff out there. And I'll tell you this right now, I'll be using e-construction in my conversations and my presentations moving forward, because these guys are top performers. The way that organization is organized and operating is truly, truly in the top performance realm. So I want to thank those guys for having me out. And then later in the week, I was over on the coast in BC talking to the Mission Sport Council about long-term athlete development, specialization, and the pitfalls of specialization, and how do we create performance environments for kids, not only to succeed in sport, but to keep them involved in playing for the rest of their lives. How far they go, we don't know. But if we don't have a good system in place to begin with, it's not possible. So listen, I want to thank Dan and all the great people at the Mission Sports Council for filling that room and just having a great, great conversation. So two unbelievable presentations this week here at Crush Performance, and I totally enjoyed them. So thanks to everybody out there. And another way we like to help people out is this radio show. That's what it's all about. And if you want to get in touch with us, go to crushperformance.com. The email is info@crushperformance.com, on Twitter @JeffCrush, and on social media. Instagram, Facebook, and our YouTube channel, which we're having a ton of fun with, by the way. Just search Crush Performance. And get to us if you have any questions or comments, or if you have a topic you'd like us to look into, let us know. We may dedicate a segment or an entire episode to your idea. Some of our upcoming shows come straight out of our mailbox and our messages. So please let us know. Happy to do it. Absolutely no question about it. And we answer every message that we get, and we appreciate them all. Today, I'm really looking forward to this show. You know, we always said that if there are two areas moving forward that are wide open, or maybe have the greatest potential for allowing us to push human performance to new levels, it's going to be through technology, the technology of equipment, no doubt about that, but also the new technology that's allowing us to monitor, track, and train our athletes, the Fitbits, the fitness tracking devices, smart clothing, some of the new technology that's coming out that's allowing us to really monitor recovery and the state of readiness of our athletes. Fantastic stuff. And while I'm excited about all of that, I might be even more excited about the new technology that's allowing us to track, monitor, and train the brains of our athletes real time. Not only so we can see what's going on there in terms of the imaging and the bio and neurofeedback pathways, but also allowing the athletes to learn how to train and control what's going on in their minds. It's the first time in history we've ever been able to do this in real time. And I'm telling you right now, there's never been a more exciting time in the world of sport performance than we're in right now. On the physical side, we've mentioned this before on previous shows, I think we're really at a ceiling. We've got a great, great handle on how to train our athletes to become faster, higher, stronger, bigger, more lean. There's really not a lot that we can't train right now because we know what we're doing. Here's what I can tell you. If you're not doing it right, you're at a disadvantage. But we know what we're doing in terms of the physical side. We also have a great grasp from the coaching standpoint on technical, tactical training. We also have a beautiful understanding now of skills, skill acquisition, and talent development. And when all of these things are put together into a full package deal for an athlete, for an organization, well, now that's when we're going to find out where are we truly able to go in terms of accomplishing and achieving human maximum performance. And today we're going to talk with the guys from DeCervo. The website is DeCervo.com, DeCervo.com. They're really pushing the limits that combine two of these great things, technology and tapping into the mind, the two areas that I believe have the most potential for pushing human performance forward in the future, maybe even right now as we speak, because the technology and understanding of the mind are now coming together, and the guys at DeCervo are doing some very, very interesting work. We'll be talking with Jason Sherwin, one of the founders, right after the break here to talk about their data and how useful is it. Listen, there is an ocean of data and statistics and sensors, as we mentioned, out there, and it's almost like we're drowning in data. What we have to do is cipher through it all and find out what's actually going to be meaningful, what can we use, and maybe most important, what's going to help our athletes based on where they're at in their development? That's the real key. And when we get there, I'm telling you right now, all hell is going to break loose in the world of human performance because we're going to be able to put all of this stuff together now and take human performance where we just haven't been able to go before. We haven't had the resources or the technology to do it. So today we'll get a good look at what DeCervo is doing and how they're using their technology to really help the game of baseball and where it might be applied beyond baseball. Really looking forward to that conversation coming up here. Before we get there, though, I just want to go back to last week's show, Drunk and Stoned, the impact and effects of alcohol and drugs on performance and development. The podcast is up. You can get it at our website, crushperformance.com. Again, it's available on virtually every platform you can imagine. And if you want to subscribe to get our weekly podcast, you absolutely can for sure. But I want to thank everybody for the feedback on that show and the incoming questions. Again, there wasn't enough time to get it all into one episode, so we'll have another one coming up soon. We had Rebecca Haynes-Saw on, assistant professor at the U of C, and we talked about the implications of legalization of pot and marijuana and what it might mean for our young people and what it means in the world of sport performance. The CBD oil has come off the banned substance list, as we mentioned in the show last week, but it still opens up the doors for a lot of issues in terms of control, purity, contamination, and potentially athletes testing positive. If they're using the CBD oil for the health benefits and it's not regulated in terms of its purity, they could test positive. That could be a career ender. So caution, caution. We're going to talk more in an upcoming episode about this because we really didn't get to the true effects of alcohol either. We ran out of time, but that podcast is up and I want to thank everybody for their feedback there. Let's get out for a quick break. When we come back, we're going to be looking at new technology and how technology is helping us tap into the power of the mind in our athletes to create better outcomes and better performance. Right after this on Crush Performance. Stick around, everyone.
Radio Influence brings you the absolute best in digital audio broadcasting. We've got something for everyone. Sports personalities like the fabulous Sports Babe, Rich Herrera, and former Major League Baseball manager Kevin Kennedy as they take you inside the dugout. We'll take you inside the world of MMA with the MMA Report with Jason Floyd, the MMA Insiders, and the Valor Hour with Tim Loy and Casey Oxendine. Or you could find yourself sitting ringside with wrestling ring announcer David Penn. TV law enforcement analyst and former police officer Vincent Hill breaks down this week's biggest crime stories and takes you beyond the badge. Chef Brian Duffy from TV's Bar Rescue shares his crazy life on the road with Duffified Live. And Scott Ledger will always make you think with some dangerous conversation. All of Radio Influence's shows can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.
Find out what it takes to be a top performer. Get the Crush blog, podcast, and newsletter at crushperformance.com. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back to Crush Performance, everybody. If you want to get in touch with us, crushperformance.com is the website. At Jeff Crush on Twitter and Crush Performance on Facebook and Instagram. And we also have a YouTube channel. You can check it out. Just search YouTube Crush Performance. We've got some cool little things there, and we're building that platform. So it's been a lot of fun. Today, I'm really excited about this conversation. I do believe the last two major areas available to push human performance to the next level lie within the realms of technology and advancements in technology, and not just equipment, but some of the technology that's allowing us to really monitor and track and help steer our athletes in the right direction, and the mind. And how technology is now allowing us to get a better grasp of what's happening in the mind, when it's happening, and how we can help athletes control that. And pushing that envelope are the guys at DeServo. Jason Sherwin, one of the founders, now joins us. Jason, thanks for joining the show today.
Hey, thanks a lot, Jeff.
I've been looking forward to this conversation for quite some time, Jason. You know, in the world of human performance, we're really at a turning point. We're at a ceiling, so to speak, when it comes to what are we going to do next to push human performance forward. Look, on the physical side, physiology, we've got this down, Jason. Faster, higher, stronger, no problem. We understand those concepts. Skill acquisition, skill development, technical, tactical, we're really still mastering that. And analytics is playing a great role there to make that more effective. But if there's two areas that I really believe are wide open territory for pushing human performance, it's technology and the brain, and you guys are doing both. So I really, really am intrigued by what you guys are doing. And maybe to preface this, we could maybe share with our audience what DeServo is all about and what you guys are trying to do right now.
Yeah, sure. Well, no, thanks for having me on the show. I'm really excited to talk with you about this. DeServo is measuring and improving cognitive performance, particularly in sports today. And, we emphasize the measuring part because we come from a science background and engineering background. And, you know, we want to make sure that we're measuring the right thing. There's a complex set of things that are going on in the brain and nervous system. When even just as I'm speaking right now, there's a bunch of things going on in my mind, right? And so what we're trying to do is tap into those signals that tap into high performance, right? How well does a quarterback see a wide receiver, just a little bit of opening to get past the cornerback who's guarding him, right? How quickly does a baseball hitter recognize that a curveball is coming and decide to either lay off of it or does he decide that it's a hanging breaking ball? Right. These are the kind of things that we're able to measure now, and we're trying to translate that into getting that quarterback to recognize that wide receiver more often, getting that baseball hitter to recognize that the curveball is breaking out of the zone quicker so that he knows to lay off. Those are the kind of things that we're doing right now. And we're using a set of hardware and software products that are done basically on your iPhone and an iPad. Also with kind of an immersive game console projected on the wall, so to speak. And even for the really deep dive on cognitive data, we're using EEG, that's electrical activity being measured from the brain through the scalp, right? So it's like a cap you wear over your head. From that kind of data, we're able to tell a variety of things that you can't see with the naked eye. When did the batter recognize a pitch even before he moved? When did he recognize that the ball was out of the zone before he moved? Or, for instance, even before the pitch is released, what is it about his brain activity that's telling us he's going to get this next pitch right, swing or not swing, without even before the ball comes? Those are the kind of things that we're able to measure right now and to help players train on to get better.
Yeah, I like this frontier, Jason, in terms of human performance. We've been talking on the show about heart rate variability, bio and neural feedback for years now. We've been practicing it with our Olympic athletes and our pro athletes. But I really like this targeted approach to really getting detailed information based on time, real-time action. This is a breakthrough, and I think it's really going to be an area that pushes us forward and allows us to develop our athletes differently, but also focus our training in different ways. We're talking with Jason Sherwin, one of the founders of DeServo. Their website is deservo.com if you want some great information. Let's go back to the start of this, Jason. What led you down this road? What is your background that took you to this really cool place in sports science?
Yeah, it's a kind of a complicated story, but I'll sum it up for you. Try doing it in 30 seconds. I grew up playing baseball. My mom, for instance, huge Cubs fan. I grew up in Chicago.
Congratulations to you guys, by the way.
Finally, thank you very much. It was like a messianic year 2 years ago.
Yeah, no kidding, man. I'm so happy for all Cubs fans. So I thought I'd throw that in there.
Yeah, no, we did every, I did every playoff game. It was fantastic. We really enjoyed
well,
it.
Well, we know if mama's happy, everybody's happy. So it's probably a great household over at the Sherwin residence now.
Oh yeah. No, my dad who had unfortunately passed away a few years ago, one of his, he was a rabbi and philosopher and, you know, into Jewish mysticism, all this kind of stuff. And his only novel that he wrote was actually about the Cubs and a Kabbalistic master breaking the curse of the Cubs. He wrote over 30 books, you know, in mysticism, philosophy, everything. But that was his one novel, was to break the Cubs curse. And they won it, you know, just these last couple of years. So,
wow.
Yeah, it's a big time baseball focused family.
Yeah, no, that's very, very great story. Great story. Well, that's some good roots in baseball for sure.
Yeah, so that's like, you know, preschool type roots. But, you know, I grew up playing. You know, my mom was actually my little league coach for quite a while along the way. And then but I was always interested in physics. And around 9, 10 years old, my mom had a book in the house called Hyperspace, which was about extra dimensions, and time travel and stuff like that. And I picked it up, started reading it. I was always fascinated by Back to the Future and, you know, Doc Brown, you know, Marty McFly. And so I wanted to study physics. So I got into physics, studied at University of Chicago. But I always played the piano, too, and I always wrote music, and I still do that. And so I was studying these two paths, really, in school after I stopped playing sports after my first year. I was on the swim team. But got really into physics and music towards the end of undergrad. I got really interested in human spaceflight. There was a lot of motion here in NASA in the States at that time. So I switched gears to aerospace engineering. Didn't really know where to go or what even the discipline was called, but I figured that out somewhere along the way. And ended up going to Georgia Tech, studied aerospace engineering at Georgia Tech. And while I was there, I got really interested back into music and cognitive performance and music, really, just kind of on the side for fun. I was reading about it, a book called This Is Your Brain on Music, actually, got me into it. And so I started thinking about how we were designing airplanes based on the algorithms that we use to make computations. And then I thought, the way we make computations, it's all silicon-based computing. Your phone, your computer, all that stuff, silicon-based. And but the brain and the nervous system, those are also making computations in totally different ways, wetware versus hardware. And so I got really interested in that and interested in the idea of applying the way that the brain computes stuff to aerospace problems. So that's what my PhD thesis was on. And then I wanted to learn more about the brain. Couldn't find a job in that in Atlanta. So the only job I got was actually at Columbia University. So that's how I transitioned to neuroscience engineering, studying that in the lab of a fellow named Paul Scheide. And he's a professor of biomedical engineering at Columbia. And his lab was focused on looking at brain activity when you make a quick decision. And these were really simple, quick decisions like I heard a boop versus a beep, or I saw a green dot versus a red dot. Really simple decisions. But I wanted to look at this in a more realistic context. And so that's where my music background came in. And I started making modifications of those beep and boop experiments and those red dot, green dot experiments that use music instead. So what we started seeing was that the brains of musicians, when they listen to a piece of music and we make a mistake in that piece, that the brains of those musicians actually recognize that mistake faster and stronger, like more activity, more noticeable activity, more noticeable difference than someone who doesn't have any musical training, doesn't play an instrument. And so that led us to think about, whoa, what's going on here? And so then we started digging a little deeper and started seeing that there was a whole element of when the musicians are just listening to this piece of music, they're actually engaging the parts of the brain that are involved in movement. So somatosensory cortices that are on the top of the head, for instance. And so we thought, whoa, this is weird. That means that basically the musicians, when they're listening to a piece of music, and I kind of know this from my experience, too, of playing piano, is that you also kind of feel physically what's going on with the piece just from listening to it. So it's activating these parts of your brain that are involved in movement. And in sports, actually, this is kind of a common thing of like motor imagery, swimmers thinking through what they're going to do before a race, runners thinking through doing motor imagery for what they're going to do before a race. So anyway, that was the germ of the idea that then led to us, working with the Army Research Lab here in the United States, looking at how soldiers react to gunshots. And then the guy who's my partner for DeServo, Jordan Moraskin, he was in the lab with me, too, at the time. He was working on totally different stuff. He's been biomedical engineering ever since undergrad. And so he was working on things in MRI. I was doing EEG. So MRI looks at pictures of the brain. EEG looks at pictures in time of the brain. So low-resolution pictures, EEG, but many pictures. MRI is a really high-resolution picture. It's just much less frequent. And so he and I talk baseball a lot. He's a Yankees fan. And one day when I was presenting on what I was finding with the musicians and the soldiers, he said, hey, maybe we should do this with sports. And he played golf in high school. And he said, why don't we do it with golfers? And I said, nah, let's do baseball. So we talked about it a bit. We figured out it would be a little easier to do technically in the beginning with baseball, too. So we started our first experiments on that. 2012, early 2012, and the rest is history, really. From there, the Columbia baseball team was very generous with their time. One of the players, actually, who's been in minor leagues, Jordan Serena is his name. He was playing in the Angels organization. He really, headed up the group and got a bunch of these guys in to do the experiment. We did EEG, we did MRI, we did the whole shooting match. And we got in space and time over the course of pitches coming to that plate, that half a second, what's going on in the brains of expert hitters, that's the Columbia baseball team, versus people who don't play baseball. It's, age and gender matched undergrads. And from there, that was really the basis for, us to develop out the idea into a product that we could put into practice in professional baseball and in college baseball. So that's where you hit. That's our baseball product. You hit came from, and now that's done on an app, on your phone, on an iPad. We have like an immersive game console kind of thing, and that's the way today that in professional baseball in the United States and Korea and other places in the world, they are scouting players on a cognitive level and starting to train them to build that dictionary of pitches faster on a cognitive level.
Yeah. No, it's great stuff, Jason. We're talking with Jason Sherwin, one of the founders of DeServo. Jason, really interesting stuff. What a great story this is. You know, I wanted to say, hey, man, this is, you know, this shouldn't be rocket science. But hold on, wait, you are a rocket scientist. And that's my weak humor for the day. And I know you probably heard that 1,000 times. But
yeah, I'm just missing the brain surgery. Piece,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, no kidding.
We're getting there, though.
Yeah, I love it. No, it's fantastic. But the story of the musicians is really interesting. A lot of the research done on talent development and skill acquisition has been done looking at musicians and how they go about mastering their craft. And the focus has really gone to that personal private practice time where, you know, you had your coaching, your teaching and your instruction, and then you're off on your own in a room just messing around trying to master your craft. And it's really interesting to see how that research has sort of spilled into every area where there's movements to improve human performance. When you guys were looking at the musicians' brains, did you guys take that one step further to maybe come up with some, I guess, theories or answers as to how it develops or better ways to train? Did that ever come into that work with the musicians, Jason?
You know, it was definitely on our mind. We're really able to start scratching the surface of that right now with some work that we're doing. We're hopefully going to be starting soon with the Army Research Lab. And, you know, it's a question of, you know, the amount of time that the study is going to go for, right? And what kind of tools experimentally you're going to use to test that, right? So, you know, with the musicians, I mean, they always start playing. We took some basic background data on them, like when did they start playing an instrument? Because, you know, it's important to start playing around the age of 4 or 5. If you're a cellist, you have to wait a little bit longer, like 6 or 7. The instrument is just way too big.
Mm-hmm.
There's this, you know, very malleable cognitive development period around those ages that's important, right? And, actually the cellist, you know, when they get their full-size cello, that's much more of an analog like the baseball where, you know, as you're 6, 7 years old, you're not necessarily able to pick up and swing a 32-ounce wood bat, right? But the coordination involved in doing that and then connecting that to the cognitive decision is very important for when you're 27 years old, right? And so how those two tracks of cognitive development and physical development evolved right now is basically by luck, you know? Some people pick one up faster than the other. Some people develop cognitively really quick, and then you don't see it because their physical development is slower.
Right.
Or some people develop physically really quickly, right? And their cognitive piece is not really evolving as quickly. And at some point, they're going to kind of like hit an upper limit of performance. We see that a lot with prospects, for instance, in Major League Baseball. When they're, you know, crushing it in college level, they're crushing it in high school level. And then they get up even to like single A, double A. And, you know, they can't hit the broadside of a barn, right? So it's because the brakes are stronger, the speeds are faster, and they can't adjust. So, but with the musicians, really, if you're really going to get into something like that, it's a longitudinal study is what they call it. And it would be over the course of, you know, 5-10 years.
Yeah.
We're starting to scratch the surface of that, though, now in this work that we're going to be doing soon with Duke University. Fellow named Greg Applebaum. He's worked in cognitive science area for quite some time. And that will be with two Division I baseball and softball programs where the idea here is to see which certain training techniques are going to have impact over the course of a year or two. That's really the best, I think, controlled kind of scientific study that you can do under the constraints of, you know, what you see on a regular basis in college and, you know, very high level college and of course, high level professional baseball to track development. And, you know, you kind of get into a difficult spot with measuring that even younger because, you know, you don't necessarily know who's going to move forward and who's not just because life intervenes. So we're really trying to move outward from the measurements, you know, at T equals zero to then expand it out to knowing what the measurement is at T minus a year, T plus a year, and then go out even further, T minus 2 years, T plus 2 years, et cetera. Yeah. Yeah. And at this point, we've got about 3 to 4 years worth of data on collected at the professional level in baseball. And that's, I mean, there are plenty of, got plenty of anecdotes. There's, you know, players that did our thing. They had great pitch recognition we measured, you know, and then like fast forward 2 years later and, you know, this guy's crushing it in the World Series.
Right.
Same day we saw another player who was a big prospect for that team. Was coming up that year. And he was kind of middle of the pack pitch recognition. And we were a little surprised because he was our first professional player we had done it with after the college players. And he wasn't so good. And we thought, ooh, there must be something wrong with our thing here. And then we did some more players, got a little more confidence that, you know, our thing was working right. And then we watched that player really closely. In his first half of the season, he was crushing it. Home runs, he was on the All-Star team, everything. Second half of the season, second time through seeing all those pitchers, now they were getting him to chase stuff out of the zone. He got a huge chase rate, huge swing and miss rate. And, you know, it's something that's kind of holding him back a little bit, even still a few years later.
Yeah.
So, you know, those are the kind of things that we're able to measure at like T equals zero. And they, in some cases, project out T plus 2 years, T plus 3 years. But, you know, it's the nervous system changes as you do certain things to it, right? You're talking about that isolated practice, you know, when you go home and work on things, there are no coaches around or anything. So it's not like, it's not like a genetic test, you know, that you either have the gene for hitting or you don't. It's something that develops over time. It's a skill. And this concept of it being like a dictionary of pitches, I think, is a really powerful one. Some people have built that dictionary and some people just haven't yet.
Yeah, I really like that. The concept of the dictionary, that body of work, and using that body of work as a frame of reference moving forward. Just great stuff. What a great concept. I really appreciate that. Jason, if you're okay hanging on over the break, we have to cut out everybody. When we come back, let's really get down to how we're now tapping into the mind and how that information is getting more and more useful in the world of performance. Right after this on Crush Performance. Stick around, everyone. Crush Performance, we're your weekly source for performance information. Join me, Jeff Crochelle, and the Con Man as we dig deep into the science and research of talent development and skill acquisition to keep you on the cutting edge and to find out what it really takes to achieve human maximum performance. And go to our website, crushperformance.com, to get details on my brand new book, The Performance Plan, strategies for top performance in sport, business, coaching, and life. Our goal is to help you get better, and it starts with the performance plan. Get control, get focused, and get results. We're Crush Performance. Join us weekly right here on Radio Influence.
This is Crush Performance. If you have questions, comments, or smart remarks, write to us at crushperformance.com.
Welcome back to Crush Performance, everyone. If you have questions, comments, or smart remarks, do get to us. CrushPerformance.com is the website. Follow us on Twitter at Jeff Crush, on Facebook and Instagram, and on YouTube. Just search Crush Performance. Today, we are knee-deep into a great conversation with Jason Sherwin of DeServo. You can check out their website, deservo.com. Jason, to follow up on our conversation from the previous segment here, you know, I'm really liking the idea of collecting this normative data, but meaningful data. There's so much out there right now. Some of it's not that useful. We're almost drowning in all the information we have, but we've got to decide now what's actually useful and what isn't. So anytime we can get our hands on some data that might be meaningful in terms of development and focus and performance, that's some important information. And if we can get a correlation between an athlete's development physically and where he's at cognitively, or a relationship between those two factors. Now, Jason, this could be some really, really important work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I mean, you know, working in aerospace, I overlapped a lot. That was my introduction really to working with the defense world here in the United States. And I saw a quote by a fellow from the Air Force, I think. He said, we're swimming in sensors and drowning in data. And that is something that the military has been dealing with probably for the last two decades now. And they're starting to have that in baseball. Moneyball happened, right? Then you had, now you have TrackMan data, you have StatCast, right? Mm-hmm. Every sport is building up this kind of capabilities for tracking player positions and ball movement and all this other kind of stuff, video, right? And in baseball, they've got bat sensors. They got all sorts of stuff, right? And the problem, though, is, you know, how do you connect that to what's going on the field, right? How do you connect that to the guy went 4 for 4 or he went 0 for 4? Or, you know, she hit it out of the park or she swung and missed, right? And those are the kind of things that that I think we're seeing with this swimming in sensors and drowning in data thing. Whenever I talk to, you know, professional baseball staff, so that's like front office people, directors of professional scouting, et cetera, they're kind of like overwhelmed with all the stuff that's out there.
Yes.
And, you know, I had a GM of a team tell me one time at winter meetings, he said, "What's the difference between your shtick and everybody else's?" And God bless him. He's also from Chicago, so I let him slide with that one. But you know, he's right. You know, I mean, in effect, he's right, right? What's the difference between measuring how the brain works and measuring what the launch angle is, right? What's the difference between the swing plane and, you know, your decision time on a fastball, right? From their perspective, it all looks the same, right? So what the real challenge is, and this is the thing we're really zooming in on now, is how do you connect, you know, I recognize the curveball 26 from the plate, 26 feet from the plate, and another guy recognized it 24 feet from the plate. How does that connect to my plate discipline measurement versus his,
sure,
right? Is my out of zone swing rate going to be higher or lower than his when I'm recognizing the ball just a little bit later, right? So those are the kind of things that we're now trying to do on a player specific level. And that is really going to, I think, be the foundation for how do you integrate physical development with cognitive development and then translating it to the field on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah.
That's the huge challenge with any of this stuff, is translating it to day-to-day use.
Yeah, I'm with you, Jason. We need something meaningful, something tangible that we can get to sink our teeth into. Great, mm-hmm, great stuff. We're talking with Jason Sherwin, one of the founders of DeServo. Okay, Jason, well, let's jump forward here and talk about the UHIT program and how this animal works, because we talk again about the power of technology and not just equipment, not just advancements in equipment. That's going to be very important, but this kind of technology that's allowing us to do things we've never done before, being able to track brain activity in real time, but also help the athletes control, understand, and for the people around those athletes, have something meaningful come out of it. How does your system work, Jason?
Yeah, sure. Well, it's really simple. It's basically like a video game. Looks like a video game, but it's a very precisely designed video game to be able to measure how quickly and accurately a hitter, a player, whoever's playing it, is reacting and calling balls and strikes. And from how quickly and accurately you're doing that, we can tell a lot against our normative database, right, about how good you are at being able to see and make contact with the ball,
mm-hmm,
right? And so with the caveat that that's all on the cognitive side, right? We're not teaching you how to swing a bat. We're not telling you, you know, you're pulling your hip out.
Right. Kind of- what a great marriage that will be, though, once this is all refined and in place. What a great, great marriage that's going to be. Sorry to interrupt, but boy, you put those two things together, this is where the next levels are going to come from.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, there are some, it's interesting, there are some coaches, there's some coaches who want to separate it out from the physical side and some coaches who want to marry it, right? So like UHIT, for instance, is you know, it looks like this video game that you play on like an iPhone, an iPad, or on an immersive game console where you're standing there with a remote, like a game remote, a re-engineered game remote to be millisecond precise. Or we have another version where it's integrated into a bat, into a 32-ounce wood bat. And so that actually, I think, gets to this marriage question, right? Because we had some hitting coaches and managers, for instance, in the Cardinals organization, who said, "We don't want to use the bat. We want to separate out the cognitive piece." So they're just standing there with the remote and getting their eyes together, right? Mm-hmm. And then you have other coaches who want to focus on the bat, you know, using the bat. So like the White Sox, for instance, they were really into doing that, right? And so it really comes down to hitting philosophy. Do you want to cordon off the cognitive piece to just work on it in isolation for a little while, and then bring it back in later on with the physical piece, right? What your swing mechanics are like, et cetera. Or do you want to do them all at once? And so, yeah, it will be a great marriage when we're able to put those two things together. And I think we're going in that direction. I mean, you have things like TrackMan data right now, being very useful for simulating what it's like to see the pitch come in, right? Now, then you integrate that with the swing plane data from like a bat sensor. So take like a blast motion tools, right? Now, what you could do is, let's say you've measured with a guy with U-hit where he predicts this pitch is going to be a strike. So then you can take his prediction of the path of the ball to the plate and then try to get him to match up that prediction of the ball in with what kind of bat plane he should do to have the best chance of success of contact, right?
Oh, yeah.
So should he, be a flat swing? Should he be a little bit angled up, right? What should he be to have the best chance of overlapping that, what they call a cross-sectional area? And so that is the way that I think at some point we're going to start seeing the marriage of these two things. And that could involve, using augmented reality with goggles. I mean, there's so many ways to do that. but U-hit right now is focused on the cognitive aspects because we're seeing it have such an impact in terms of what defines a good hitter and a bad hitter.
Yeah.
And I don't mean good hitter and bad hitter like, he can hit the ball 200 feet versus 400 feet. I mean like someone who's a line drive, steady line drive hitter, and someone who's guessing. And some guys guess effectively, 25, 30 times a year, and those are 25, 30 home runs, right? But they also will have very high strikeout rates, very low contact in the zone rates. And so those are the kind of things that we're trying to improve. And it's really only a matter of milliseconds. It's really only a matter of a player waiting another 50 to 100 milliseconds to see just a little bit more information about the pitch. And, if you are a hitting coach, you never tell a player to wait up there, because if they're thinking of waiting, the ball is going to be by them before it's too late.
Yeah. Amen.
Right? So what you got to do is figure out a way to train them to wait without them knowing they're waiting. And that's really where the training methods that we have in our in U-hit really are shining through. You take something like we measure your reaction time and accuracy, right? I'm calling balls and strikes. So let's say my reaction time on average is 390 milliseconds. That's 0.39 seconds from release. And so that should translate on a 90 mile an hour fastball. That should translate to about, let's say like 40 feet from release.
Yeah.
So that means I got about 20 feet left to get the bat off my shoulder and make contact. Now, I want to have a little more time, right? And so what do? I would use in U-hit what we call reaction time enhancement. What that's going to do is now you're going to see the ball come in, and all of a sudden it's going to cut off at some distance from the plate. Let's say it's 2 feet from the plate. And if I get it right, the next pitch I'm going to see is going to cut off 3 feet from the plate. I get that one right, the next one's going to cut off 4 feet, et cetera, right?
So
if I get it wrong, it's going to give me back a little bit more of the pitch. It's going to give me back a little bit more on the next one if I get that one wrong. So what it'll do is it'll adapt how quickly I'm seeing and connecting that decision to movement. So that is going to take my 390 millisecond reaction time ultimately and move it back. Now, how much it moves it back, it really depends on the pitcher. Some pitchers give away their movement really early.
Yeah.
Some pitchers don't. That's what they call tunneling. So, but we've seen, just in like one session, I've seen guys knock off, 50 milliseconds from their reaction time or more. And that translates into, dozens of feet sometimes. So that's a huge difference for a major league hitter who's making decisions, in way under a half a second.
Oh, let the games begin, Jason. I'm telling you right now, this is a new era of training and developing athletes. There's no question about it. And again, technology at work, advancements in technology. Jason, listen, really, really appreciate your time today. I'll be following you and Jordan very closely over at DeServo. If people want to get more information on you, DeServo.com is the best place to get a hold of you guys, I assume.
Yeah, deservo.com is great. 833-DESERVO is our toll-free number in the States. If you want to download UHIT, it's for baseball and softball. It's just a free app download on Apple Store or on Google Play.
Great stuff, Jason. And we're looking forward to talking to you soon because I see many implications, as you mentioned, here in soccer and football. Injury prevention is another angle here. So we'll look forward to future conversations.
Absolutely. Thanks a lot, Jeff.
There you have it. Jason Sherwin from DeServo. Great conversation. And this is what I'm talking about. The last two big areas of potential for human development and pushing human performance forward, the mind and the match between the mind and technology. Now, what we're able to do is incredible. So we'll watch these guys with interest. And I think there's implications well beyond baseball. Jason mentioned it. They're already working on it, but a lot of implications here. And just another great example of how we're moving forward in this age of technology to advance human performance. Fantastic stuff. And ladies and gentlemen, it's just begun. So exciting times in the world of sport performance. And some pretty exciting times right here. We've got some great episodes we're working on here at Crush Performance. Coming up over the next few weeks, we are going to go back to our number one priority when it comes to human performance, sleep. We're going to get back into it. We're going to talk about how much sleep you need. If you're having trouble getting to sleep or getting that quality sleep, what can you do? We're going to get back to some of the world's top experts there. The Crush War on Sugar will rage on once again. Some of the latest data coming out is alarming, concerning when it comes to obesity, diabetes, and Alzheimer's. Listen, we have got to cut back on the sugar. And on our side at Crush Performance, we've got to get back to the war on sugar. It's coming up. Stay tuned for that. Run Like the Wind. We're going to look at human performance in running, what's happening in the world of running. Can we get faster than Usain Bolt? Can we break the 2-hour marathon? Well, we're trying. There's no doubt about it. Technology is also playing a big role there. It's going to be a great show coming up. Drunken Stone, we just passed. I want you guys to know that show is available on podcast. Go to our website. You can check it out. We're available and you can subscribe and download in virtually every podcast platform imaginable, but a very important show. We're going to revisit that because we have some unanswered questions. I want to thank everybody for the feedback we've been getting on our Drunken Stoned episode, looking at the impact of drugs and alcohol on performance and what are the risks that we're facing as legalization for marijuana and hemp products is becoming commonplace around the world. There's some big issues and some unanswered questions. So a great episode there. We're going to revisit this and expand on it. We couldn't fit it into one show. So that's coming up as well. And we're also working on another great show called Tipping the Scales. We've got some really close friends that have lost a lot of weight and it's staying off. So we're going to talk to those guys to get their secrets, what they did and how it's fitting into their everyday life. But more importantly, the impact it's having on their life as a whole. Unbelievable stuff that's coming up later in the summer. We're going to look at the NCAA and how they're going to deal with their athletes and the amount of money they're making. Some big issues brewing in college sports, and we're going to get back to concussions as the football season looms near. We've got to get back to that important discussion. So if you have any ideas or topics you'd like us to look into, let us know. Crushperformance.com is the website. info@crushperformance.com is the email, and some of the episodes we're working on right now have come from our mailbox, come from you guys. So thank you for all that input and thanks for the questions. We're investigating and the answers are coming, no doubt about it. So thank you guys for that. Listen, thanks for tuning in today. That'll do it for now. Go out there, get better, and we'll talk to you next week, everybody. Stay safe.
Goodbye now. Don't forget to write.
This is a Duffified Live with Chef Brian Duffy Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
We're talking to Kim Ring from Ring Communications. She is a master of all things publicity and social media.
Instagram lets you put like 35 hashtags. If you use the generic hashtags, what's happening is there's so many third-party softwares out there that a lot of these people are like signing up for because they're, you know, quote unquote, too busy. So they say, like any post that has this hashtag or follow any account that says that they do this. So it's a little, it's not authentic. Right. So, you know what I mean? Like there's too many tricks to build and there are ways to build followings. I mean, I only include hashtags of topics that involve the picture. And I think about where is the audience that I'm trying to capture. So if it's like one of my restaurants, I'll hashtag Boston restaurants or Boston foodies. And I keep it to really, really targeted stuff. And you will get followers there. You're not going to get hundreds at a time. You will build an authentic following. You know, you just got to keep at it, be patient, and not have these crazy expectations.
Duffified Live with Chef Brian Duffy can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and of course, RadioInfluence.com.